Good morning, everyone. I'm Charles Martindale, I'm pastor of the church, and wasn't that a great joy to be able to share together and something that really we share as a church family. And I think if your heart is filled with thanksgiving at a moment like that, then it should be. And really, I kind of liked when Alex was so much worshiping with the rest of the church that he didn't realize that we're ready to move to the next part of the service. There's a certain grace involved in that. Pastors don't get to do that very often. You know, we're kind of always thinking about that next thing, and so that's kind of a blessing. But it's good to all be together today when we are going to begin a new sermon series, which starts this morning. It's going to run through the Sundays in October. There you go. Pay careful attention to what I say today. Everything's coming out wrong this morning. This is August, right? Okay. That's good. That's going to be the month that we focus on this series, and we're calling it How Sweet the Sound, and it's going to be connecting to some of the great hymns of the church, many of which were requested by the church. You may have noticed over the couple of Sundays there on the connection card, there was a place asking you what's a favorite hymn, and we were going to try to work that in. So the hymns that are going to happen over the weeks of this series were all ones that showed up on that list as we invited people to respond in that way. So the series of sermons is invitational, and it's going to be inviting us to reconnect to some of the powerful messages from these hymns, from some of the insights in them, the ways that the words of the hymn or the tune can sometimes sort of get stuck in your head or in your heart as you find yourself sort of re-singing them over time. Has that ever happened to anybody else, or you sort of get a song stuck in, what do they call that, an earworm? Is that what, yeah, or something. It just kind of keeps going there. But what we're finding is that many times the stories that are behind the hymn, or the life stories even of the ones who wrote the words of the hymn, are those stories are so real and so inspirational that even when sometimes they're written hundreds of years ago, they seem to still speak to us when we get in touch with it. And they kind of make a difference in our lives. They bless us in ways sometimes that we expect and sometimes that we don't even expect. So the hymn for us today is the one that we just sang, the one that Alex sang so much that he forgot that we were still in church at the end of it. It's Great is Thy Faithfulness, which our worship team did such a great job leading us in. That's today's hymn, and I want to talk about that and the message of the hymn. But what I've been discovering as I've been paying attention to this is that to truly understand the message of the hymn, Great is Thy Faithfulness, we actually have to first understand something about complaining. Here's what I mean. Later on today, we're going to be having a visit from our daughter. Earlier, I said our daughter-in-law by mistake, but I know she's really our daughter. See what I mean? It's just been coming out all wrong. I'm getting old. I don't know. We're getting there. Anyway, our daughter and our son-in-law. When I jotted down the word to remind me, son-in-law, I accidentally wrote sin-in-law. It may have been a Freudian slip, or I don't know how that is, but this just hasn't sort of been where I've been at here lately. But anyway, it's Sarah and Jordan, and they live in North Carolina. They're going to be heading to New York, and they're going to make a sidetrack to stay over at our house tonight. And you know, we're excited about that. We look forward to this visit. The kids, of course, are all on their own and doing different things, so any chance we get to spend time with our kids, we just treasure. So we're looking forward to it, and I hope it all goes well. Does it sound a little ominous? I say that because what I've discovered is that for Christmas this past year, Jordan, our son-in-law, gave our daughter Sarah a book for Christmas. The title of the book is A Complaint-Free World, How to Stop Complaining and Enjoy Life. It seems like a loaded gift to me. You know, if somebody gives you a gift like that, there seems like there's more to it than that. But according to Sarah, this was actually one of the top things on her wish list, so it was kind of her idea. She was wanting to get this book, and I had at one time thought seriously about telling an embarrassing story about Karen and complaining at this point, but I was told that that was not a good idea, so. Imagine this, a book that promises that if you just get your complaining under control, you'll finally be happy. Your health and your energy are going to improve, that's what the book says. Your attitude will improve, your relationships will improve. All of this can be yours if you just stop complaining. That's what the book tells us. So it defines what they mean by complaining in the book, and this is what they mean. To express grief, to express pain, to express discontent. And the idea is we're supposed to stop doing that. So what if I told you that there's an entire book of the Bible that's entitled Complaints? Because there is. I'm going to be reading from it here in a few moments. It's called the Book of Lamentations, which another word for lamentations is complaints. That's where the reading's going to come from today. And actually, that is the place in the Bible which connects to today's hymn, Great is Thy Faithfulness. I'm going to be reading from the third chapter. If you want to follow along, there's Bibles throughout the room, and it's on page 766 in the first part of the Bible. I'll be reading some different verses or various verses from that chapter, so I'll kind of be jumping around a little bit. But let me just give a little bit of context before sharing this reading, and which I think might help, because the Book of Lamentations came about when the city of the people of this book was completely destroyed. It was completely overrun. As a matter of fact, their nation was conquered by an enemy power. And the people were all displaced. They literally had lost everything in their lives. It was a time of almost unimaginable devastation in everybody's life. They lost their ability to practice their faith because when the city was destroyed, the temple was destroyed. They lost their friends and their family who were killed in the war. They lost their homes. They even had to live in exile in a foreign land for a significant period of time. So at least part of this reading that I'm going to share from chapter 3 expresses what it is like, what it's like to lose one's entire identity and to feel like that's where we're at. Where we've just lost our whole identity, our whole bearings, our everything that matters to us in our lives. That's what's being expressed in this part of the Book of Lamentations. I have to tell you that up until obviously this morning, I had no idea I'd be reading a passage like this on the day after what happened in Dayton, took place overnight this past night, that happened in Dayton or that happened yesterday in El Paso, Texas. But I have to say, these words can take on some very powerful expressions of human experience when we kind of put ourselves in the position of anybody who's connected, and we are all connected, but maybe who's very directly connected to such tragedy and loss. And that's how powerful these words can be. So let me share this. It begins with verses 1-3, and then I'm going to share a couple of other places from this chapter. I am one who has seen affliction under the rod of God's wrath. Right off the bat, you see where this person's heart is. Not only complaining, but who's the complaint aimed at? Who's behind all this? They're going right to the top. They're going right to the top. This is how I feel. This is what's going on. And God, I'm complaining to you because you're the one. That's the tone of this. I just want us to see that. I'm the one who has seen affliction under the rod of God's wrath. He has driven and brought me into darkness without any light. Against me alone, he turns his hand again and again all day long. He shot into my vitals the arrows of his quiver. I've become the laughingstock of all my people, the object of their taunt songs all day long. He has filled me with bitterness. My soul continually thinks of it and is bowed down within me. Do you see the crisis that's being described here, what this complaint is? He's lost his self-respect. He's lost the respect of anybody who he knows. He's lost his way entirely. The complaint is that everything that matters has fallen apart. That's how this reading begins. Okay, now the rest of it then, there's a shift. There's a deeper awareness than just the complaint. So that's where we read it like this. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him. Now think about that. This is one who has no portion of anything that he had before. But this is where he finds himself at this point in what he's pouring out. My portion is the Lord. The Lord's my portion. Therefore, I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. God's mercies, that's where it ends up with in this reading. God's mercies, they're new every morning. Or as it's expressed in the song, in that great place of the hymn that we sang a moment ago, morning by morning, new mercies I see. I don't know about you, but I like that. I like the sound of that. And that part sounds a lot like a book about learning to live a complaint-free life. But that other part that expresses where the person is in the midst of all the devastating loss, not so much. Because there has been all kinds of change, tremendous experiences of loss, all in the lives of the people from that time in the ancient world. What seems so clear to me is that for the people of the Book of Lamentations, there was this clear kind of a marker, a line in the sand before and after, the way everything was, but the way everything is now after all the disaster that has come. There was the way things used to be, and then there was the moment when it feels like every single thing that matters has absolutely changed. And what I've been discovering in talking with people is that there are many in this room who know exactly what that means and what that's like. And there may be various moments over the years of our lives where we understand those insights that are expressed in that reading. The hymn that we're focusing on this first week, Great is Thy Faithfulness, was written by a poet by the name of Thomas Chisholm, who was born in the mid-1800s. And after coming to faith, he was so in love with God that he decided that he wanted to become a pastor. He wanted to be a preacher, so he actually became a Methodist pastor for 1 year, for just 1 year. Because he had so much sickness and difficulty in his life, he just couldn't do it. He wasn't healthy enough to continue on. I don't know what his illness was or what he suffered from. I didn't come across that in my research about him. But his illnesses continued over all the years of what really was a surprisingly long life for someone who was dealing with the ups and downs that he was dealing with over that time. It affected his work and his ability to work. For a while, he was a journalist, but then he got sick. Then he worked in insurance, but then he got sick. And he tried to serve as a preacher, but that didn't last very long. And he never came to a place where he was in what you might consider to be full health, and what he might have described as getting back to normal. So for much of his time, he would write poetry, and that's why we have the hymns that came from his life and his reflections. And his words in the hymn call our focus to the words of triumph from that chapter in the Book of Lamentations. Great is thy faithfulness, great is thy faithfulness, morning by morning, new mercies I see. What Thomas Chisholm discovered is that even with all the ups and downs of his life, the things that he would try and that didn't work out, and that he would try again and didn't work out, and dealing with the flare-ups of whatever health challenges he was living with, all of the ups and downs of his life, what he discovered is that even though he has all of these ups and downs, God with us doesn't go up and down, but rather God's presence is steadfast. And the writer of Lamentations discovered the same thing. As we find in that same chapter where I just read, where he writes, "My soul is bowed down within me. God has filled me with bitterness." And just a moment later, he also says, "But this I call to mind, therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning." Reflecting on the same spiritual dynamic, one of my favorite authors, a person by the name of Henry Nouwen, once wrote about what he called spiritual dryness. I don't know about you, but I have had times of spiritual dryness. And what he means by that is a time when you're just not feeling it. You know, it's like kind of a, well, where are you, God? I was kind of counting on you to always be there, but I'm just not feeling it. I just can't get wrapped around it in my thinking and in my feelings. That's what Nouwen describes as spiritual dryness. So I think we have a quote that we can take a look at here, but here's what he wrote. "Sometimes we experience a terrible dryness in our spiritual life." And when he reflects on that, then he talks about how that usually leads to what could be described as a crisis of faith or a crisis of belief, where faith and belief begin to be overwhelmingly replaced by doubting, and where all of a sudden all of the good news just sort of sounds like a fairy tale instead of something that is really being experienced in a person's life, especially during times of suffering and real challenge and hardship. And those are the very moments when, Nouwen goes on to write, it's important to realize that most of these feelings and thoughts are just feelings and thoughts, and that the Spirit of God dwells beyond our feelings and thoughts. And he goes on, "It's a great grace to be able to experience God's presence in our feelings and thoughts. We would describe that as mountaintop experiences, and they're great, aren't they? We've had those. We love them. We love the mountaintop experience. And it's a great thing to be able to experience God's presence like that. But when we don't, it does not mean that God is absent. It often means that God is calling us to a greater faithfulness. It is precisely in times of spiritual dryness that we must hold on to our spiritual discipline so that we can grow into new intimacy with God." So what does something like that mean for us when our health suddenly makes us unable to do the tasks that we love to do? Or when our circumstances mean that we cannot live the life that we might desire or that we've worked toward for a long time? Well, one of the things that it means is that we have God's permission to just say so. It's okay to just say so. It's okay to say the words, even, "My hope is gone. That's what I think. That's how I feel." And it's okay to admit it. Not only do we have permission to say something like that, but if we look in the Bible, we discover that God actually gives us the words to use to do it. God has given us the Bible, which includes not only the book of Lamentations that we heard from this morning, but it also includes the Psalms of Lament, of which there are many in the book of Psalms, and one of the most familiar is the one that we often think of when we read about Jesus' crucifixion on the cross, and when Jesus expressed the words of one of the Psalms of Lament. Remember how he spoke those words about feeling forsaken of God. Why have you forsaken me? That's from one of the Psalms of Lament that Jesus actually spoke. And to me, this means that we're allowed to just say so too. We don't have to only or always keep our chin up. We don't always have to identify the ways that, well, it could be worse. We don't always have to do that. Instead of learning about a complaint-free world, God's word gives us the freedom to honestly express our grief or our pain or our discontent. That's the book of Lamentations, whose gift is that it allows us to be right where we are and to not pretend to be any different. And it promises that God will meet us right there. Maybe that's a new way for us to think about God's mercy. Maybe that's what God's mercy is all about. It's not always making things right again or fixing things so that they'll be the way that they used to be every time. God's mercy is also the deeper trust that God receives us where we are at this moment and at every moment, listening to our cry, morning by morning, being present with us, whether we're in a place of joy that day or whether that day is our time to cry. God's mercy may not be to give us the immediate happy ending or the happier ever after that we always wanted. It may also be to give us words for the deepest cries of our heart. And then when we are ready, God will also give us other words for the deepest hopes of our hearts as well. That's the steadfast love of the Lord that never ceases. That's God's mercies that never come to an end. That's why great is God's faithfulness. I'm going to share a word of prayer together, and I'm going to begin with a few words from the hymn that we sang a moment ago. Would you join with me in prayer? Great is your faithfulness, O God, our Father. There is no shadow of turning with you. And yet sometimes, O God, we deeply need to express the rest of the chapter and trust you with the honest prayer about where we are right now and about our wondering about what's next and about our knowing that we cannot make it on our own and discovering more deeply than ever that we must rely on you and your grace in this life and through eternity, all through our Lord Jesus Christ, in whose name we truly pray.